Welcome. It is the Buckmaster Show, off and running on the first Monday of June. Barbara Coffey is with us. Barbara is the Director of Economic Initiative. She's head of economic development in the city of Tucson. She's our Monday one-on-one guest, presented the one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. A lot of times when we talk about economic development, we're looking, as you were saying, you know, in the pipeline, maybe some big deals coming up. But what about the people that already have a business here and their small business? Sometimes they may feel like they're out in left field.
Well, we have a strong commitment to supporting small business. So actually the mayor and mayor and council a few years ago put a stake in the ground and said, we need boots on the ground. We need small business navigators. And so what I can tell you is we just opened a new center at 600 South Meyer that we call the Tucson Small Business Center. Mm-hmm. And we are co-located there with the Tucson IDA that creates access to capital, a financing arm. And
IDA is?
Industrial Development Authority.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying. Mm-hmm. But it's exciting. Our team of three in the small business program have worked with our smallest of smallest businesses, the micro enterprises. Have
like a couple of employees?
Exactly. You know, 2 to 10 employees, maybe a few more, maybe, you know, here's what it looks like. Accelerators for restaurants or food-based businesses. They have an accelerator or a program to help people take their side hustle to a formalized job, like become registered contractors, mm-hmm. and they help mm-hmm. them study for the exam. Mm-hmm. They're doing these programs in their native languages too. Mm-hmm. So being taught in Spanish, when many of these Spanish, you know, speaking small business owners, that's the only language they speak. So mm-hmm. to be able to sort of receive technical assistance that way is very meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to the pipeline, as you refer to it, these are businesses that are thinking, perhaps Tucson is, well, maybe it's got to be on their radar screen or you wouldn't put it in the pipeline. I mean, that's part of the deal, right? So what is our competitive advantage that you see at this point? What does Tucson have when you're going up against other places? Just throw out places like, you know, Albuquerque or something.
Right. When you compare
Fresno whatever.
To our competitive set of cities in the Western region.
Sure.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. One of the things is available land. And real estate that's more affordable. So even take, for example, 90 minutes up the road in the Phoenix market, our land for industry is going to be more affordable. That's an important bottom line factor for businesses looking at where to locate their facilities. Our location in the Southwest, I-10 and I-19, 60 minutes from the ports of entry at Nogales, that is absolutely a competitive advantage. When you think about all the days of sunshine that we have, and thank you for the rain, but yes, mm-hmm. mostly we have beautiful weather and not a lot of things that stop or hinder business. So that is also good. We don't have a lot of natural disasters, you know, tornadoes and hurricanes and things like mm-hmm. that break down a lot of other communities. You don't get that here in Tucson. And so those things are important to business when they need to be sure that they can keep on producing and distributing product.
How does state land, we have so much state land around the Tucson area, and I wonder how does that fit into the picture?
It fits in beautifully because
it helps.
It absolutely helps.
Okay.
Because we have a partnership with Arizona State Land to transition that land for commercial industrial use. We just have in the last couple of years annexed over 2,300 acres, a site we call H2K that runs along I-10 and near Houghton and alongside the UP rail corridor.
Is that where we're seeing some warehouse activity?
We're seeing that. You've seen that at Port of Tucson, but it stretches then south of there and is opening up this opportunity for us to be competitive with these large projects that are looking across the United States. We've mm-hmm. called them mega projects, mm-hmm. right? But they have large acreage requirements and they need this kind of property. And so just the fact that, again, we're advancing entitlements for that, making it shovel ready in that regard is really important. Right now the city is looking at another very large 8,000-acre swath of land south of the airport that, again, is also state land and would involve annexation to the city as part of a planned area development.
So areas that might not have this large state land, if there was a project that liked a particular piece of land and wanted to make it, as you say, shovel-ready, well, you'd have to negotiate with the current owner, and that owner wouldn't be the state, and there wouldn't be an agreement with that owner. Am I onto something here?
Yes. It's complicated. Sometimes it's easier with a private property owner if they're willing, right? Mm-hmm. And if they are knowledgeable.
But if they're not,
it can be difficult. You could have a piece of land that sits there vacant or underutilized for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. So where is the action in your business? I mean, these companies, are they looking to come out from, you know, cold weather places? Are they looking to come from California? Why are they thinking about Tucson?
Well, both of those things you mentioned are actually mm-hmm. what we see a lot of. You know, Canada and Mexico are still targets for mm-hmm. us. And so as companies look to onshore activity, that's great. The California factor is always at play. We are definitely a lower cost environment for business, mm-hmm. about 30% across the board when we think about comparison to California. And yet we're as close as you can get without going in, or they are, you know, we're as close if they're trying to come out and still have, you know, oversight over maybe facilities they have in both places. So it's a great position that we have in the Southwest region. But we're seeing a lot of activity in general in Arizona because there's been emphasis on semiconductor mm-hmm. growth in the Phoenix market, which is bringing a lot of supply chain following that. So you're seeing, you know, Tucson is a household name in Taiwan, for example. Yeah. And that's because of the work that's happening with semiconductor and the expansion of
with the Taiwan,
of TSMC.
Mm-hmm. all the chip development yep. and their activity that they've got going on in Phoenix. And that has actually even translated into the first nonstop flight from Sky Harbor to Taipei. And I don't want to promote Sky Harbor, don't get me wrong, because Tucson International Airport is a great partner for this program, but it just shows how Arizona is now on the map in Taiwan.
And it shows the opportunity, right, for all of us that are nearby, where now you have two markets that mm-hmm. with two great workforce, with two great universities, with, you know, or more. And so the assets multiply mm-hmm. when you think about where we are in Southern Arizona and Central Arizona, and given the focus on us mm-hmm. right now from worldwide.
And the tariff environment could be to our advantage. Explain that.
You know, I always look at a flip side opportunity, right?
That's why you're an economic developer.
You try to find the positives, the silver lining. In this case, as companies navigate what may or may not happen, they may be looking at an opportunity to bring their product closer, right? Onshore, that either at that activity in manufacturing or that distribution and logistics component, but some way to counterbalance maybe the expenses that rise in one area because of these federal, administrative orders, or they find ways to, again, get closer to their markets and secure that. I think that we will see some of that activity naturally, given our proximity to Mexico and companies that already enjoy the benefits of that kind of mm-hmm. situation. And so this would be the thing that puts them over the edge. Okay, mm-hmm. let's move that operation in. Let's do this aspect of our company here in Tucson. Mm-hmm. It can be advantageous for us. I think that's what we need to begin to talk about with companies.
How does that work, this foreign trade zone? The product part of it would be assembled in Mexico and then final assembly here. Perhaps you could enlighten us how that works.
The foreign trade zone is basically an inventory tax abatement incentive so that companies that are here in the U.S. could bring in raw product, and that product would be able to sit without taxes associated with it for up to a year. And then it's used and they're process and their manufacturing, and it's converted into something that ultimately they export. And so it gives them a year to do that and some savings across the board.
When a company looks at Tucson, don't they look at everything? Schools, roads, water availability, the whole package?
They do. Yeah. They look at the quality of life in a community. They look at healthcare amenities. They look at lots of things that would make for a ripe environment for their workforce, something that is attractive to people they may have to recruit, but also to the longevity of the people that then they hire and they have on board. How long can they keep them? Is this a community they'd want to be in? Mm-hmm. Those things matter.
How about your office taking calls from folks that are in small business? What's the best way to reach you and your team?
The best thing to do is to
email you, or
is to look at connecttucson.com.
Connect Tucson, okay.
And then also they can easily Google now. There's a new website for our Tucson Small Business Center. And if they look for that, they'll also find a calendar of events at that location with all of the programs and opportunities, which are, by the way, all free for small businesses to take part in.
All right, Barbara Coffey. Talking about economic development, 30 years now in the business, and one of her highlights was bringing the Raiders to Las Vegas and the new stadium there, not so new, I guess, anymore, in Henderson. When did you first start? How long did that deal take to come about? Years or what?
That was fairly quick in the grand scheme of things, because, you know, owners decide and then everything lines up,
right? With pro teams.
It's, you know, quick decisions and timing is everything. But I would say still a couple of years in the making. Haas Automation is one of my favorite projects that I was fortunate to work on. And bringing that manufacturing from California to Henderson to a brand new campus and bringing lots of jobs in the CNC manufacturing component. So I think all of it is a privilege to be part of, and I wouldn't say that I do it on my own.
All right. Great to see you, Barbara
Coffey.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks
Bill.
A lot. Monday One-on-One presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Coming up next, our border report with longtime border observer Keith Rosenblum. Always lots to talk about what's going on in Mexico. We'll be right back.
Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, off and running on this Monday, the first Monday in June, a very unusual June. On the way to the station today, I couldn't believe it. It was 75 degrees, and the humidity was like, I don't know, like monsoonish, but it sure felt good, and it's perfect time after the rain. Check out Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. All of the Green Things at Green Things did a very collective sigh of, did that feel good, right? Getting some rain after hardly a drop of rain here in almost a year. But anyway, greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business is Zocalo Village, all those beautiful imported items from Mexico and Europe. All right, when we do our telephone interviews, we're going to do one right now presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Usually the first Monday of the month, we bring in our friend, longtime border observer. He's worked at the Arizona Republic, the Arizona Daily Star, as a border reporter. He's worked for legendary Jim Colby, United States Representative Jim Colby, who served this region for almost a quarter of a century. Keith Rosenblum with us now on the live line. Hi, Keith.
Keith Rosenblum every June tries to speak about himself in third person. Keith Rosenblum doing great. Good to get, and it pleases him to hear.
Well,
Buckmaster.
I have a full agenda for you today, and I'm going to start with the country, Mexico's first ever judicial elections. Keith, how is it going to work?
Oh, Keith is bummed out. But I will say that I believe it was a huge waste of time, money, and is nothing more or less than the consolidation of the judiciary into the unipower, the unified power of the Morena Party. And any attempt to disguise it or to have it be anything other than what it was, which is a power grab, is bogus. And that the people that President Lopez Obrador, who's now out of office, this will be it'll be his drop, his role. Legacy will be to have achieved that as well. But again, as I've thought with our own presidency, I don't ultimately hold leadership people responsible for things. I believe that it's a public, and I'm a deeply troubled individual, even though I can drown that in a good sandwich anytime. I think that that it was a colossal waste of money, waste of time. 13% of the electorate voted in it. I think that figure may actually be higher than what it was. No one could understand it. It was all done in the name of El Pueblo. You can see the idiocy from one society to the other. So much of it, if a person goes back and watches Woody Allen in Bananas and they have a crazed Latin American dictator declare the language of San Marcos officially now to be Swedish, you can see the goofiness of this whole thing. And you have to have a sense of humor to be able to assimilate it. What Mexicans did on Sunday was just foolish, but it was ordered by their Congress. Congress said, we see flaws in the judiciary, which there are lots of them. I am not going to be touting the brilliance of the Mexican legal system. It was already a horrible system, but what it became what it became on Sunday was more horrible instead of a change. And this is the consensus of anybody in Mexico whose IQ is over 80.
You know, I researched this a little bit, and Mexico has become, this is the first country in the world to elect all its judges by popular vote.
It was done. You can do anything. If I go out in front of my house and I start shouting in the name of the public, in nombre del pueblo, if you can go do that, I believe you can get anything. I believe we could elevate, you know, gerbils to high positions in government if we could say that we needed to do it in nombre del pueblo, in the name of the public. And so this is what López Obrador did. And because the Mexican legislature was so beholden to him, that what our president has right now in the House of Representatives, and almost as well in the Senate, but not quite, pales into what President López Obrador had in his Congress. It was to call it rubber stamp would be even underestimating. It was a legislature just ready to approve anything. They would have changed the national language of Mexico to Swedish if they'd had the opportunity, or President López Obrador had said to do it. So Claudia Sheinbaum comes in as the anointed president, right? López Obrador chooses between her and Marcelo Ebrard, who is now the Secretary of Commerce, and a very decent guy and a very sharp guy. And I think Claudia Sheinbaum is too. I think that she had no choice, though, than to continue what had been done in the previous legislature. They could have found an out bill, but no one was ready to do it. But they knew, the PRI and the PAN, all the minority parties of Mexico and friends of mine, because I've done a Keith poll.
Mm-hmm.
I asked friends of Keith, which are already a pretty small community, but I asked the ones that I can pick up the phone and will still take my calls.
Mm-hmm.
About the election, and they all use the same word. And it's not because they've been indoctrinated or anyone's gotten to them ahead of time or any kind of groupthink. It's because it's a farsa, it's a farce. And so anyway, 13% of the country just voted all these judges in, and what they did was the judges campaigned, as judges do, and that's what the Mexicans use, the leadership used to say, look how democratic it is. But what's lost in that explanation is that the judges, the people who were nominated, got the party to sign off on them in the first place. So what's corrupt here, or what's rancid to begin with, is the original census of people from whom you could choose. And then, on top of that, the gall to provide people how they might vote. Like, they called it an acordeon, which is an accordion. It's like you and I might, if we don't know certain, you know, no one, when we fill out a ballot in Pima County, we got a lot of stuff on it at once, right? We got some judges, we got some sales tax initiatives, we got some, maybe some other referendum, we have salary. We got all these different things. And I don't know the last time we voted, but I think it took us maybe 2 minutes or 3 minutes. If we did an absentee ballot, maybe it'd take a little bit more to seal the envelope and look at everything and make sure you sign in the right place and put a contact number. But the Mexican ballot yesterday, I saw a marvelous video by a guy named Luis Carlos Ugalde, who's one of the, he would be kind of like a younger, like a, I don't know, columnist, like a Tom Friedman or a George Will, somebody of Mexico, who's been in and out of government himself. And he follows you. He shows you that he goes to the ballot box. He says, I was number 25 today out of 550 people who were authorized to vote at that polling place. So look at right there. He was 5% of the people that actually showed at that polling place. Then he shows you the ballot. And the ballot is, if you think our, you know, ballots have a lot of stuff to absorb, it was 10 times the size of our ballot. And he calculated. He said, I'm a guy with a reasonable education. It took me 20 minutes to get in and out of the polling place. And I had done my homework
about
who these candidates were. So the qualifications for judges were way dumbed down. So basically, anyone who had a law degree, which in Mexico you can obtain much more easily than in the U.S., and who had 5 years of experience and had some references, could compete. And so it became kind of like a, it really did become like a popularity contest with some people who were good looking. It wasn't. So anyway, I'm more despondent than ever.
All right, can you take a quick call here before the break?
Of course.
All right, let's go to Matt on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Keith, about a month ago, approximately, the Trump administration revoked the visa for the governor of Baja California, Pilar. I was wondering, and her husband, I assume, and her family, because of, you know, her, I don't know, they wouldn't explain why they did it. Even the president of Mexico asked for an explanation. I thought, you know, this might, you know, be a bad sign. Just curious what you're thinking on it, or if it's already been resolved. Thank you. Bye.
My take on it is that it is one more grandstanding facade thing that our government does. In other words, Pilar, I know the Maria Pilar, whatever her name is, the governor of Baja, and as with our deportations of our own people in a couple of cases, citizens, in other cases, just residents, in other cases, people who are undocumented, what we've been doing is telling them, you know what, you are a threat to the U.S., either your ideology or somehow we've determined that, you know, you're pro-Palestinian, you're anti-Semitic, which all these things to me are bizarre because I don't see it at all. I'm Jewish, and I don't see the anti-Semitic argument as holding any substance whatsoever. But hold that thought. What we're doing right now with the Mexicans in this list is to say, look how attentive we are. And I don't trust our intelligence agencies on this, and I don't trust the Trump administration to be using any more legal foundation or any more savvy when it comes to painting Mexicans with the same brush. In other words, we could end up disqualifying. I could, if you gave me the time, there's 31 other governors, right? So I could go ahead and I could do Google searches, and every single one of those 31, there would be something online, somebody accusing him of being a narco apologist or a narco this or that, or being involved. So we would do it with everybody. So no, I think it is a horrible waste of time. It paints people as being delinquents before they've ever had any kind of ability to defend themselves. If we have something on them, you know what? When they come to the U.S., arrest them. How's that? How about you? When they present themselves for admission to the U.S., which Keith Rosenblum does generally 365 days, multiply by, I do it probably 300 times a year. And if they have something on Keith Rosenblum, when they do a little, you don't even need a passport anymore because it's all facial software anyway. But if I was guilty of something, or I was suspected of something, there's a warrant for me, they'll take Keith Rosenblum and put him into secondary and then arrest me. And that's the probably happy family as a result of that. But that's the way, the end of my appearances for in public. I don't know if the Buckmaster show can be done from inside a Pima County jail or from Florence.
I don't know, but let's take a break right here. Keith Rosenblum on our live line. We'll be right back. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Additional support comes from our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Beautiful day here. It's really beautiful after the rain over in the Gila National Wilderness. That's in Silver City area. Just about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Start your planning now for an enchanting getaway at southwestnewmexico.org and visit our friends over, well, it's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. You'll be glad you took that road trip. You'll be welcomed with open arms by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Well, apparently the CIA is being welcomed. Keith Rosenblum is on our live line for his monthly border report. And there have been reports, Keith Rosenblum, of covert CIA drone flights over Mexico. And Mexico's president has admitted the Mexican military is now cooperating with U.S. agents to spy on the drug cartels and locate fentanyl labs. Your reaction?
It's the easier one for me is the fentanyl labs, as you probably know. I'd be shocked that you can't put a fentanyl lab in a basement somewhere. And last I knew about drones, they're great, but will they be able to detect a basement number two in a residential area, you know, where you could easily have people storing their camping gear? Will be able to detect something? I also have. I think that fentanyl has just become a rallying cry. I think that there's no reason we'd want to try to interdict fentanyl at all. What we want to have is a U.S. population that understands its danger and a U.S. population that can go pick up the drug that anytime you take a fatal dose of something, you can use it to counteract it.
Narcan, it's right. Called. Narcan.
Yeah, I've seen that. And that actually, I love the fact that the state of Arizona has bought the billboard space and the print space to tell people about it. I think that that's a really good use of taxpayer money and that we should know about it. But I think that it's very much a pretext. You know, if you want to pull somebody over who is black or Latino in Mississippi or Arkansas or any of those other states or maybe the rest of the 48 as well, you would find a pretext stop, right? you'd pull someone over because they changed lanes before you had cameras. They changed lanes inefficiently or, you know, without blinking. Somebody's blinkers were out. Their windshield wipers weren't functional. They had a pretext stop. That's what it's called in law enforcement. And I believe that fentanyl is a pretext issue for the U.S. and Mexico. I don't think we really care as a population. I certainly don't care. I think it's a waste of a huge amount. The drug cartels, I've told your audience before, I think that's also a huge waste of time. Again, that's a habit issue that the U.S. has. All we're going to do, if we did it, any interdiction at all, is to make the prices higher for people who are already going to do something. And I don't see that as being a solution. The only solution there is, and tied in with our homeless solution and others, is to dissuade people. The Rosenblums don't have that problem, nor do a lot of families that I know. We have social issues, and interdicting something, as Elliot Ness's, you know, descendants could tell you, interdicting something for 13 years during Prohibition was a waste of time as well. We learned that lesson faster, taxed alcohol, and we were done with it. And we haven't learned that. So I think that the drone flights are a more serious issue. That is a sovereignty issue. I come down on it. While it's unregulated and while there's not treaties to deal with drones, I come down thinking that anyone has a right to set a drone anywhere as long as it doesn't, you know, buzz your. I would shoot a drone down if it came over to my house and, you know, by Toomey Park. But I actually am okay with U.S. spying with drones. And I also would recommend to you and to your listenership that if they didn't read the Max Booth essay in the Washington Post either yesterday or the day before, it's fabulous. He starts off talking about how seminal changes in warfare are actually very infrequent. Mm-hmm. But he talks about how he starts off with the Pearl Harbor attack and how the Japanese changed warfare that day and explaining why. And then he goes to the Ukraine use of drones in Russia and says this is as important.
Yeah.
So, again, drones are going to change the way that we do lots of things. And maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's a bad thing. Maybe there'll be there'll be like a golden dome thing for drones as well. I don't know. But the essay that Max Booth made is a must read for people.
The Sheinbaum administration put her security minister to do a report that more than 20,000 people have been arrested for, quote, high-impact crimes since President Sheinbaum took office, and they're highlighting the seizure of more than 10,000 firearms.
Well, they can highlight the seizure of a million firearms. There's not the context that we need there. So, again, it's a profitable business, and guess who make profits from that business? That's us. Those are our arms makers. So the idea that there have been confiscations, great. Do we want to have tracers on bullets? Do we want to have liability the same way for sales abroad as we have found in some cases for sales in the U.S. when it comes to, you know, we're essentially funding militias, which we've done all over the world anyway. So why are cartels don't go in and say, oh, by the way, we're a cartel. They figure out some other way to acquire them. They have surrogates. They buy direct. I don't know. That I'd be fascinated by. But we don't have in the U.S., we don't have the political willpower to police the sale of armaments from our gun makers to Mexico. And when it comes to ability to trace weapons, we don't have the willingness either. I read the ATF study, which came out several months ago and was widely cited in both countries. But there's not we do not have the willingness to say, okay, well, you know, if there was a shooting yesterday in Veracruz or in Culiacan or in, you know, somewhere else, we'd like to know where that weapon came from and how did it get there. It can all be done. We just don't have the political willpower to do it.
All right. Keith Rosenblum, any final thoughts here in the final 30 seconds with you this month?
Only that people are the same, that what Mexico has gone through with the judicial election is no different than we did. And it's important not to reach out and blame leadership. It's important to look at the people who are around your dinner table and down the block and hold them accountable for what they did and say, you know what, we can't be going along with this because pretty soon, as Jim Colby did say many, many times, those rights don't come back. Once they're gone, they don't come back. So cherish them now, otherwise they won't be around.
All right. Keith Rosenblum. Thanks, Keith. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. You bet. Bye-bye.
All right. Keith Rosenblum, our border reporter with our monthly border report. It's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show, off and running in the month of June here on a delightful day weather-wise. Hope everybody has a great afternoon, and we will be back with you with our Tuesday edition of the Buckmaster Show. That's coming up in about 23 hours. See you then.
Cortero, Tucson's only live local news and talk. 1030 The Voice, a Bustos media station. Online at KVOI.com.